This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty.
We've all got stories.
Some are very extraordinary stories. It might be good for somebody to look into theirs.
Because a story is the shortest distance between two people.
The Living Room is our ongoing storytelling series curated by Allison Downey. The next story is the first in our series about identity and acceptance in West Michigan's LGBT community.
Rachel Gleason spent much of her youth at her church. Worshiping, studying, singing, babysitting, the church was her life. But that began to change when Rachel started to understand who she really was.
My name is Rachel Gleason. I'm 27. I grew up in Hudsonville, which is not too far from Grand Rapids. We definitely, you know, weren't allowed to watch a lot of stuff on TV. My mom would be like, that's raunchy. Everything was raunchy. Like, you know, we weren't allowed to watch Friends when I was a little bit older. And so, of course, I, like, loved that show.
Okay, you have to stop the Q-tip when there's resistance.
From my dad's front yard, you can see five churches. The church that I grew up in, they always kind of talked bad about, like, those churches, that they were, like, dead and quiet and, like, they weren't moving in the spirit the way that we believed you were supposed to. You know, it was a very small church. There's probably 60 to 70 people any given Sunday. It was a branch off of Pentecostal. I learned there that being gay was, like, the worst thing you could be, just by, like, the language, the way that they talked about gay people, seeing news clips of, like, the gay pride march at Grand Valley and, like, you know, my mom, like, making a disgusted noise and changing the channel and, like, just seeing those people. And I remember seeing those, like, butch women and being like, oh, like, that is the worst thing you could be. Like, that is the worst. And I don't know if I, you know, even knew that was, like, internalized homophobia. But there was definitely always preaching against that. By the time I was in high school, I was going to church five nights a week. Yeah, because we had Wednesday night services, Thursday night prayer meetings, every single Friday night except maybe one. Saturday, they would have intercessory prayer. And then Sunday morning, we had worship service at like 11 a.m. I was on the church puppet team, which was special all on its own. We knew we were weird. We knew that other churches didn't act the way we did, didn't fall down and cry and roll around and march around the sanctuary. We almost wore it as like a badge of honor, like we were on fire, that we had it. We had something that they didn't have, a deeper connection with God. And that kind of was proof. You know, when you did doubt, you're like, well, you feel this, don't you? And like they called it the presence of God, that feeling that you would get when 60, 70, 80 people are in the same room with terrible acoustics and everyone's just like yelling and singing and crying and speaking in tongues, and all this energy is focused on the same thing, and it's this energy that's like palpable, and like people really did fall down. Like I believe that some people literally have been knocked off their feet by that feeling, and that was validation that God was good and that God was moving and that God was alive in the world and that he could do things through you. And it was very empowering, and a lot of those moments were really beautiful and I loved them. They felt really good. Being slain in the spirit is what it's called when you fall out. And they'd have ushers, like, ready to catch you. They'd start praying for you, and if you wouldn't fall down, it's like they'd call in reinforcements. And so there's all these people just, like, ah, like, intense, like, praying for you. And so it's, like, sometimes I would, like, you know, just fall down right away to avoid that, like, the longer they pray, the more they'll see of me. Like, I was always hiding something, like, so afraid that they would see the sin in me. And I think just in general, I felt like I was always not good enough and hiding. I don't know how consciously aware I was that I was gay, but I think that was probably part of it, that feeling of hiding something, maybe not knowing exactly what it was, but that was a big part of it. My senior year, I felt really hard for one of my friends, and that was, like, the first time I, like, realized that, you know, I couldn't deny those feelings. I had had similar feelings but didn't know what they were. I don't know why I felt jealous when my best friend liked a guy. I didn't understand, you know, didn't know. So I got books, some gay literature. I think one of them was just The Color Purple, Fried Green Tomatoes. Like, hid them in my room on the side of my bed and, like, the cabinets and stuff. And I came home one day, and they were sitting on the, like, buffet cabinet in the living room. And I was just like, oh, my God. like, this is it. And my mom was in her room, like, reading one of them. And, like, I came down the hallway and she came out of the room. And she was, like, holding it and she confronted me. I remember just crying and kind of just sitting, and we were sitting in the living room together. And at the end of the conversation, when it had been quiet for a while, she said, "So what do you want to do about this?" And the implication was asking whether I would go to counseling or not. And I agreed to go to counseling to pray the gay away, quote unquote. The pastors, they told me that I was no longer going to be a greeter, that I couldn't, you know, because that was one of, like, our duties, but people would take turns, like, standing by the door and opening the door and greeting people when they came in. I was going to be no longer in AWIPS, the Awesome Warriors in Prayer group, until I had been healed, as they said. I remember being really scared that everyone was going to find out and wonder why I wasn't doing any of those things anymore. I remember being hurt and feeling guilty, and that it was, like, kind of relieved that it was out in the open. But mostly I remember feeling humiliated and leaving the office and getting yelled at because I was late for puppet practice, and my friends, like, asking where I was and what the meeting was about and why I was crying. And I remember that decision of, okay, I can either stay here, stay in the church, don't tell anyone, never get married, live this life, be on fire for God, or walk away from it into something that I had no idea what I would do or where I would be or what my life would be. But, like, the possibility of, like, finding love was, like, important to me. When I was 18, I was living with my mom, going to Grand Valley, going to counseling. But my writing 150 professor was my first college writing class. So I started to try and write a paper about homosexuality and evolution and all this, and she was like, "Let me talk to you after class and, like, see what you're thinking." And it kind of just ended up being this coming out paper. It was called My Closet Has a Window. And it was the very end of the paper. You know, I said, I know what I have to do. I've always known what I have to do. I just haven't found the courage to do it. And I turned that paper in, and then I went on Christmas break and decided that I was going to come out and that I wasn't going to go to the church anymore. But I met with each of my church friends. I told my friend Hannah just one-on-one, and, you know, she couldn't believe that I chose sin over her and that friendship and my faith. But I haven't talked to her or really seen her since then. And, you know, leaving the church meant I didn't have any of those friends. I literally had one friend to my name, and it was an acquaintance from high school who was gay, and another friend that I had just met that I barely knew were, like, my only friends. Because everyone else, even my high school friends that didn't go to church with me, were not okay with me being out. I think I felt really guilty, just heartbroken, the loss of those people and hurting those people. And that knowing that I would always understand the way that they felt because I'd been there and I'd been in that position, and knowing that they would never understand why I did what I did or, you know, respect it. You know, I still have love for them. I think they're misguided, and I think their hearts are in the right place, though. It's harder for me to forgive the pastors. But yeah, I'm very happy and very at peace with where I am, and so glad to have the freedom that I do. And sometimes I'll have, like, nightmares that I'm back at the church and I have to, like, break away all over again and, like, tear myself apart all over again. And it's like terrifying to feel that, to be back there and feel that pressure again of, like, I have to hide everything. And I wake up and remember that I don't have to do anything. I don't have to answer to anyone but myself. And that's exactly where I want to be.
That was Rachel Gleason of Hudsonville, Michigan. Hers is the first story in a series we'll have in the coming months about identity and acceptance in the LGBT community.
Thanks, Allison. Allison Downey curates stories for our ongoing series, The Living Room. This story was produced by Zach Rosen. Support was provided by a Kalamazoo Community Foundation grant from the Fetzer Institute Fund.